Welcome to the Men of 8 Gang Podcast, episode 313. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Rest in peace, BB.
Graham Thickens.
That is some smooth music.
And Phil Wilson.
Hello.
Yeah, the music is not his, but it's evoking BB King, who passed away on Thursday, and one of my blues heroes, music heroes. I love BB King and blues guitarist specifically, and I learned all kinds of stuff in just since he passed, that his real name was Riley, and the BB came from him being known as Blues Boy King when he was first starting out. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Of course, Phil, you were in the music business. You know everything.
Yeah, I know everything.
Because you were a disc jockey.
But I've seen BB twice, and I can tell you that he's been old for a long time.
Oh, God, yes.
He was older than 89. You know, he's been an institution for so long. I thought he was in his 90s, but he almost got there.
Well, it's amazing when you look at the really poor health he was in when he was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, in his 60s?
Mm-hmm.
He's not looked like, you know, the picture of health for quite some time, but...
It was interesting from the first time I saw him to the second time I saw him. You know, as he got older, he would actually play less during his concerts.
And, oh, really?
You know, he would always sing. And there were, you know, periods in his concert, at least the last time I saw him, where he would play for quite a while, but most of the time it was singing and then, you know, the odd riff, you know, just here and there to sort of punctuate the song. It was still great. And I still remember him coming on the stage. It was the first time I'd ever seen this really sort of Vegas style entrance where, you know, these two large men came out before him and, you know, guided him onto the stage. And at the end of the show, these large men came back out to guide him out, but also were throwing out BB King picks and things like that. It was like, it was interesting, it's nice to say, yes, I've seen a blues legend like BB King, king of the blues in person and in concert. So it was great.
I think he lived in Las Vegas. So I was flying out to Vegas once for a conference, and I'm sitting next to this woman who was also from Bloomington, grew up in Bloomington like I did. And so we were chatting and she was just hammered. And all of a sudden she grabs my arm and she leans in and she says, you are not going to believe this. And I said, what?
I'm really drunk.
Don't look. So she goes, don't look now, but BB King is over there. And I turned and I looked over my left shoulder. No, don't look. And I did anyway. And here was BB King with his big diamond encrusted Lucille pin on his, on his jacket. I thought, well, maybe I'll say something to him when I get up. And all of a sudden she stands up and goes over. And he's at the window seat. She leans over the guy next to him and she's just like, Mr. King, you're so great as you is. And I just thought, God, imagine being him trying to deal with that, you know? Oh, my God. Anyway.
Anywho.
So top Minnesota stories? This week?
Looks like Phil had a good week here.
It was a busy week, but I had a chance to did a little presentation to the students at Prime Academy on Wednesday or Thursday. I can't remember now. I guess it was Thursday. And Prime Academy is the code school that's now. Sort of the nerdery. Some of the nerdery folks were involved in it, and about 20 students, and I'm happy to say at least I think 50% of them were women. But we had a chance to kind of talk a little BuzzFeed, but also talk about getting involved in the community and our work with Technovation MN and that sort of a thing. So it was nice to see. It was really nice to see these people that were very enthusiastic, very energetic about learning code, and seemed to really be enjoying themselves. So, and that's the first cohort. I know they have another cohort starting, and they just sort of overlap as they kind of progression on. But things are off to a good start at the Prime Academy. So I'm anxious.
Very nice.
Were your remarks a listicle displayed? How you lay that out on a mobile app? Was that part of the talk?
You know, I can speak. Those of us at BuzzFeed, that joke's getting old.
Yeah. Well, I was wondering, actually, Tim, whether or not there were any surveys or any kind of quiz that we could give these attendees to find out if they're scarred for life now that they were presented to by Phil. So.
Great. But anyway, I wanted to point that out. But also then just another thing that happened, we had Mobile Twin Cities that was on Tuesday night. And I was contacted by Justin Robinson, who is one of the co-founders of Drizzly. And Drizzly is one of the liquor delivery startups that has moved into Minneapolis. They started in Boston, but they have been in Minneapolis getting launched here. And, you know, kudos to them, A, for doing the sort of guerrilla marketing of, hey, there's a meetup. Do you guys want some free beer delivered by Drizzly? And then, you know, he kind of talked about the business and that sort of thing. But it was I thought it was a great thing. And Justin was a really nice guy to meet. And I really appreciate the fact that we had beer delivered. That's a beautiful thing.
Did he bring a good bottle of hooch with him? Or?
Oh, yeah. We got all sorts of good beers.
Only beers. Nice.
Oh, yeah, beers. We got beers. Beers is what we got.
So. Like a lot of surly beers?
But, got some surly beers. Got some bent paddle.
How about some grain belt? You got grain belt?
Didn't get no grain belt. Just got some craft beers.
Speaking of surly, did anybody make it to the Beta MN event on Thursday evening?
By the time I went to get tickets, they were gone, so.
Yeah, I had a ticket, but I passed. It was too hard to get to, but I'm sure it was a mob.
Wait, there was free beer. You passed?
Well, it was a $10 event.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
I gave my ticket to a client.
His Apple Watch didn't say free beer on the appointment reminder.
Right. Up with free beer next to his prompt. Beta MN, free beer.
Actually, this was a week I didn't go to a single event, which was a nice breather when you had weeks where there were four or five in a given week. It's nice to get a little break before next week kicks in.
Right.
Well, speaking of events, then I know we've been talking about this for a few weeks, but the Hack the Gap is going on today, and there was a really nice article in the Star Tribune about the event, and so I thought I'd stick a link. A link in the show notes, because it's one of the nicest ones they've done, and they had it right on the front of the I think the B section.
Business section.
Yep, and
by Evan Hempstead.
Anyway, really nice article. So I just thought I'd throw that in there.
Yeah, and are you guys going to go to the demos tomorrow? I've got that on my calendar. Starts at 11 a.m.
Well, my bride comes home, so I'm picking her up at the airport, and I haven't seen her for a week.
We'll take her to the presentations for Hack and Cap. She'd love it.
Somehow, I don't think that's going to work. But anyway.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to that. It'll be interesting to see. I actually volunteered to help out at that event. Never heard anything back from them.
Oh, really?
It's going to be interesting.
Well, it's because it's not a sausage fest, so you can't go.
They don't want tall white guys there.
Yeah.
That's an interesting question, because we all agree, and I think all of us on this podcast believe that we need to correct this issue of imbalance between male and female, especially, you know, and the diversity in the tech industry. So my question is, the answer to overcoming that diversity gap in technology, is the way to overcome that to just have like female only exclusive conferences?
No, and in fact, I would object to your premise that we don't need to. We don't need to balance the gender. We need to encourage the young women who have an affinity for technology and an interest and want to pursue it to do so, because it's so funny. I mean, I'm sure you guys have all experienced this exact thing, where you'll read the newspaper next to your wife, and all of a sudden she'll say, "Hey, did you see blah blah blah?" And it's like, "I just read that section. No, I didn't. I didn't even notice." Or we'll walk into a store and she'll say, "Oh my gosh, look at that!" And she'll describe something, and I literally had walked right by it, didn't even notice it. And we'll look at applications, and we'll look at websites and all sorts of things, and her perspective, and my daughter's too, it's the same thing, you know, they'll look at it and they'll come up with completely different things that I hadn't even considered or thought about. And I think that's more important, the whole perspective of of, you know, how to create something and how to build a UI, and what the whole user experience is all about. That's what I think is really sorely missing from a feminine perspective in technology.
Well, maybe it's semantics, Steve, but I'm just saying that there needs to be more females in the technology space. That's all there is to it.
That's the bottom line.
So, but my question is the answer to that, to, you know, put on conferences that are just targeted to female, or is it better to try to integrate more women into existing, whether it's conferences or workspaces or whatever. And believe me, I'm a big supporter of Technovation MN. I've done my fair share of lobbying for that sort of thing and working on those sorts of things. But I'm just wondering, is that the way that we do it to make, you know, to try to overcome the quote unquote boys club nature of the business by doing girls club nature of the business?
I think at this state, yes, that's the, we are going to have these women-only kinds of things, because the culture right now within tech, and it was probably, you know, shown to great example with the whole Gamergate thing, is that boys and girls just don't get along, and there's not an equal, they're not of equal power. So to try to get girls interested in tech, I think they're going to have to be in this girls only club. And then hopefully over time we can change people's attitudes and the culture changes so we can have an integrated, you know, tech kind of community. I just don't see it at this stage right now.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting.
Unfortunately.
It's interesting. And we've talked about this, before. And I think that it always bears talking about, and, you know, so I just kind of want to throw that out there.
Yep.
But anyway, I'm looking forward to seeing what comes out of that conference. Just like I look forward to every conference and what comes out of a, you know, sort of a startup sort of hack event.
So just a question for you, because how old is your daughter? She's 16.
16.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So does she, is she interested in tech, or does she have a natural affinity for just sort of understanding how things work, or, what's her level of interest in, and what's her acumen like? Her
well, you know, I think of that, is she interested in going into the technology world? Probably not. But I don't necessarily know why that is. You know, you try to, as a family, we try to make sure everybody feels like, you know, they get exposed to everything. They have the opportunity to investigate everything, find things that really make them feel passionate about. I think I have convinced her to at least take a course in programming, you know, an intro course, just to see what it's like, to see if there is an interest in that situation. So, no, she hasn't, but she hasn't really arrived at anything that she's 100% passionate about yet. And I don't think that there's a rush for that.
No, she's got time.
She does all sorts of stuff. She's involved in, you know, everything from sports to theater study groups and things like that. So she's doing a lot of everything and still really kind of getting that smorgasbord thing. So, but yeah, I mean, I think I look at the opportunity for women in the technology space, and, you know, the job growth that is there, or the ability to find a job in technology now is one thing, but also to make an impact in technology, either as a, not just as a young woman, but yes, as somebody entering that space. Yeah. So.
Well, Tim and Graham, I don't know how you feel, but I think Phil and Lori should have a sit down with their daughter and make her plan out her future every step of the way. What
That's
do you think?
That's right. Yeah? Absolutely. Yeah. That worked, you know, worked for me.
None of this, just figuring it out.
Always, that meeting always goes well.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah. Along with the college budgets meeting.
Yes.
Yeah, that always right. goes well too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh yes. My gosh.
I was going to say there's another event that was mentioned in Evan Ramstead's article in the Tribune this morning, and that's Startup School FemTech.
Yes. Right.
On June 19th, yes. Which we'll talk about it or list in our.
Yep, we'll list that later.
Events, but we'll list that in the events, that'll be a good one as well.
Yep.
And there might be guys that actually show up at that one.
Well, I'm just kind of curious about that, because it is sort of a mentoring concept, from what I understand. It's a so I'm kind of curious to see what that's like. So yeah, I'm going to go to that one too.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
It'll be a good. I've got a colleague client that's going to be on that agenda there. So yeah.
Cool.
Good stuff.
Well, when I saw this next story, I thought of you, Steve.
Well,
I thought, boy, Steve is going to be at Target more than normal now.
Well, yeah. So what the story is for everyone listening
is
Target stores are going to introduce dedicated smart home sections called Connected Life. And, you know, it's so funny because when I started buying LED bulbs like crazy when I was at Home Depot, they were the first big box retailer to offer them. And to offer them at a great price. They had some deal with XL Energy, and you could buy these 60-watt bulbs for $5 for quite a while. Now they're $8. But anyway, and I kept going into Target, and they had zero LED bulbs over and over and over again. And now, over
Target wouldn't be known as your place for light bulbs, right?
They have a huge section, a whole aisle of bulbs basically.
Okay.
And at any rate, they started carrying a lot of GE LEDs and I think some other brands. This was a surprise because I thought, you know, is it too early for a mass merchant to be involved in connected home stuff? Or is this a timing thing where it's going to explode this fall? What do you guys think?
It depends on who has an ecosystem.
The connected home section is going to explode. I don't want to be there for that.
Explode in sales and in products.
It seems to me like a hodgepodge of stuff. And yeah, there's protocols that can link all this stuff together, right. But no one has an overarching, you know, vision and something like an Apple would do where it all just works together and you just hook it all up.
Well, I would disagree because I think SmartThings definitely has that because they're a device, or I should say a thing agnostic platform.
I don't know. That's just kind of they've come up with an interesting idea to link these things together.
Yeah.
But I think it has to be all, you know, in the same kind of thing that this works all together and uses the same protocols and all that.
Yeah. Right. There was a great Verge post this week. Don't confuse smart devices with a smart home. It's a
very
good one.
True.
It basically says that very thing that, you know, it's like waiting for all this stuff to just work out of the box is like waiting for Godot, you know. There's a lot that has to come yet. But
now, ladies,
you know, where
and gentlemen,
does
that? That is one entertaining play, let me tell you.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen Waiting for Godot? That's brutal.
Yeah, well, it can be. But the the Apple HomeKit, which is supposed to be announced at WWDC, is that going to bring in a whole new era here or not, Steve? What do you think?
Oh, I think it definitely is. And in fact, it'll do a lot of things in terms of putting it on the radar screen of retailers and all that kind of stuff. But to your point, Tim, it still isn't to the point where I can go out and buy even devices that SmartThings say are compatible and supported. They do hook up and they do connect, but there's issues with them and sometimes they lose connection and blah, blah, blah. And so I don't think that there's enough standardization yet. It's not like going out and buying a light bulb. You know, you can buy an incandescent and it goes in your lamp. You can buy an LED bulb and it goes in your lamp. You know, you don't have to worry about it, whether or not it's compatible, even though that's not entirely true because dimmer switches and other sorts of things don't necessarily work perfectly. But you know, I think we have a ways to go, but I think that if Apple does really go crazy with HomeKit at WWDC at the developer conference, I do think that this fall it's gonna really take off. And now Spark changed their name, and you know they're
trying, what's with that?
We knew that had to be coming because Spark is such a generic name, and I think that
it is.
I think it's probably a good idea for them to make that move now. as they start to kind of get to that tipping point of really breaking through.
Well, yeah, and they're trying to position themselves as a platform.
Yes.
So they can't be known as a platform, and nobody knows what to put in for a URL.
Right.
You know, they put in, they do a Google search for Spark, and up come, you know, 17 different companies in there. May or may not be.
So their official name is now Particle, and they're going to start changing all their branding over and all of their social outlets and things like that.
Yeah. So. Particle.io.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which I think is great. So good for them.
Yeah. It's a good idea. So.
So, did you see the, we've talked about 3D printing as sort of this whole extension of, you know, technology and internet and that sort of thing. Stratasys did not have a great first quarter.
No, and thankfully my wife won't be listening to this podcast because I really, really was putting 3D printing on her radar screen and with articles and all kinds of stuff for, you know, some of the consulting clients she has because she was giving these presentations and talking about prototyping and so forth. And then she announces one day, she comes down, she says, "Oh, by the way, I just want to tell you, I just bought, I don't know how many, 200 shares or something of Stratasys."
Oh, no.
And oh, my God.
She lost her ass on those. And so I feel really bad.
I don't think she lost her ass on those. You lost her ass on those.
Yeah.
They may come back. Yeah. You never know.
Well,
keep that money in there. It's long-term money.
You haven't lost anything until you get out.
Right? Yeah, that's precisely. Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, there really isn't anyone else in the world that has a dominant footprint like Stratasys does, you know, especially with their OEM strategy. But again, you know, how long can that last?
Well, how good is a footprint on pavement? I mean, it doesn't leave necessarily. There's not a lot of footprint there, so it's all a matter.
It doesn't seem like there's a lot of applications yet for
kind
of stuff.
Right. Yeah,
I mean, it's kind of you know, Maker is sort of the only thing. So if you want to make a case for whatever, you know,
or prototype a piece of hardware.
Yeah.
So I found that article interesting in that they have a deal with Airbus. They're making parts for Airbus. I really want parts printed for a plane?
No, that's a bad idea.
How about for implants? It's got a big application for medical implants.
Yes,
and that's pretty serious business.
It is.
Yeah, on a couple of fronts. I mean, it really is happening. It's serious. It is happening. But those are things that go inside your body. So, you know, the FDA is going to be all over that.
Well,
I'm sure they are.
Yeah. I'm sure, Phil, that the people that are in fact using these for mission critical applications have looked through the product and make sure that it works. And
let me go ahead and print up one of them turbine blades for you.
Exactly.
Yeah, hold on. It'll take about a half an hour.
Just wait.
Sit down, have some coffee.
Yeah, let's just 3D print the autopilot button. And oh, they broke? They all broke? Oh, geez. Sorry about that.
Don't worry. Free beverage service.
That's right. As we go into the mountain. Oh, my God. Well, anyway. So a new documentary is coming. On Twin Cities Entrepreneurs.
A series of documentaries.
Really? Is it going to be web-based or it'll be on Netflix?
I'm sure it'll be web-based, don't you
think? Netflix. Yeah, they didn't say. But I've never, have anyone of you heard of this company, what is it, Augusoft?
Augusoft?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I've met Jim. Yeah.
Jim also started...
Skyway Fund. Skyway, whatever it was.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, exactly.
The accelerator that didn't quite work out.
Yeah.
But at least he tried.
Project Skyway. That's it. Project Skyway.
Right. Yep. So.
And then I think they also have a thing they called Skyway Fund.
Yep.
And this Jim Erdem has invested some angel funds in certain companies, I guess. So maybe they have a website for that, but who's this Jeff Martin? Do you guys know him? I think I do, but I'm not sure.
Sounds familiar, but I can't place him.
I can't either. He leads a St. Paul-based Collective Genius is the name of the company.
Yeah, and he's a headhunter.
Yeah,
he's a headhunter apparently. Yeah, he's not really ever present in the startup community that I'm aware of. But no. He's apparently met a few of these guys. Did they say who the next one is going to be on or not? They didn't say in this article. No. Oh, wait. Yeah, Brad Sorok, the e-commerce entrepreneur who founded digital agency Loftopia. That's not exactly another household name. Do you guys know Brad Sorok?
Anyway, I think I've met Brad, and I'm trying to remember the name of his software, the e-commerce software, but they're a multi-million dollar software company.
So, based where?
In Minneapolis.
Oh, right in Minneapolis.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. I'll poke around, see if I can find it and put in the show notes about him. So we'll see if we can do that.
Yeah, so. Apparently this guy is interested in kind of hearing their stories from the beginning, how they ended up becoming entrepreneurs. And, you know, Cem was an immigrant from Turkey. And, you know, he's got that interesting story about how he started trying to do entrepreneurial things by handing out flyers in the Skyway.
Oh, that's how it came up. Okay.
I think when he could barely speak English, you know, so he literally started in the street. Or in Minneapolis, you say he started in the Skyway.
Interesting.
He comes from the Skyway. You don't come from the streets. You come from the Skyway, apparently, here in the cold country.
Wow.
So anyway, that'll be interesting to hear about.
So delivery startup Postmates expanding to the Twin Cities with free punch pizza.
Yeah, it's only through tomorrow, though. So yeah. What?
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
Get a free margarita or Napoli pizza from Punch Pizza.
Yeah, but they're not going to Lakeville. Downtown, uptown, southwest, right, yeah. You know, just in Minneapolis.
West St. Paul.
And St. Paul, yeah, West St. Paul.
There's no commitment there. If you can't deliver a pizza down to Lakeville, there's just no commitment there.
That's right.
Yeah.
There is.
But, you know, I got to tell you, though, that when my daughter was working, you know, because Best Buy has this Flex thing where they can work over the VPN from home, and they can do that, you know, various times. She would have lunch delivered because she'd want to work right through lunch. And if she leaves her machine idle for, I don't know, 10 minutes or something, logs are out, and it's a real pain to manage the time card or whatever system they use. And so she would often have stuff delivered, and it was just all over the map, the different companies that she would use. You know, they were reliable and some weren't, and it was just a crazy maker. So it'll be nice if these guys get their act together and you can call up and say, yeah, I'd like Chipotle, or, you know, bring me a venti from Starbucks, venti mild with a little shot of hazelnut. Well, that'll be nice.
So is it basically just restaurants that these guys are going to focus on? Or because this is sort of like Bite Squad territory, and
it is.
Yeah. There's a lot of players in this general space.
This reminds me though of Webvan and all those guys way back, you know, 15 years ago.
Does it really?
Yeah, it does. Cause it's like,
yeah, the grocery stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how it works out this time.
I'm not sure I understand the name Postmates in that situation, but hey.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, isn't it?
It is kind of weird.
Sounds like it's almost sounds like a postal service sticky note thing.
Yeah, it does. It's a weird name.
So, well, speaking of post.
Yeah,
post. And speaking
nice
of
segue.
Guys
very nicely done, Tim.
Lakeville Business News. Tell us about this, Tim.
Well, Malto Meal Post Holdings is coming to Lakeville. They're part of Mom Brands. I didn't know that. But anyway, so Mom Brands bought Post.
Malto Meal, Mom.
Oh, no, the other way around.
It was the other way around?
Post bought Mom Brands.
Yeah. But interestingly enough, they're going to get out of their New Jersey headquarters and move here to Lakeville, which
they
is
like Minnesota.
And how would you not want to do that, Tim? Come on.
No, I would certainly do that. But you usually don't see these kind of things. Usually, you know, they shut it down and here, and then they move to some, you know, place out east. But no, this is good to see. We need more business of this scale here in our great little town.
There you go.
Do you have any idea where they're going to set up shop?
I think down here, actually, near South High School, there, you know, we have that light industrial area, and I think there's a building.
So near the Epinor plant, or?
I think so, yeah, okay. In that general area. But, you know, we've got a lot of light industry down here, sort of clustered near the airport, and it's, you know, it's growing. And we've got plenty of land south of here, that's for sure.
Right.
So,
oh yeah,
we're just gonna pave right over Farmington.
Yeah, that's right. We're coming to get you guys.
Just be done with it.
Yeah. So did you guys go to Taste of Lakeville on Thursday night?
No, I go to Taste of Lakeville about every other year, and this was an off year for me.
$35. I mean, we don't have great restaurants down here, so come on.
No, that is one place. That is one thing we could really use some help on. Is some
good, I mean, Porterhouse is pretty good, and the Rudy's is pretty good, but that's about it. And then it's like, you know, Applebee's and and that ilk.
Well, you guys can move.
What?
Yeah. True.
Why would we want to move from this little slice of heaven that's known as Lakeville?
It's actually Taste of Lakeville is a pretty big event. It's quite a bit bigger than Taste of Edina, if you can believe that. But it's been going on longer, I think.
I'd rather taste Edina than Lakeville, but whatever.
Okay.
Well yeah. I've got a client that helps run
Taste sites. Of Lakeville is a huge fundraiser for Rotary. I know that.
There you go. Yeah, that's really what it's about.
Well, good on them.
Good on them. Yeah, listen to you, Mr. Australian.
Interesting.
Good on you. Good on you, mate.
Well, yo. Graham, you probably know more about this than any of us, this next story about Blue Cross joining the medtech startup space at Treehouse Health. What's that about? And what's their motivation, do you think?
Well, it's, you know, like all big companies, they could use some help with innovation, and and the smart ones, you know, look outside beyond their four walls. And so this is the second corporate partner that Treehouse Health has signed, HCMC being the first. And both them and Blue Cross have internal innovation folks, and they realize the value in mixing it up with the startups and in their relative spaces, and that's what they can do by having a presence in a big incubator facility like this. So it's significant because you don't see too many great examples of the big companies really trying to collaborate with the startup community. So, you know, it's a good thing that Treehouse has been able to pull this off, and it probably won't be their last corporate partner. They'll be signing up others as well. So yeah, there was an article in the Tribune and the Business Journal and they said Blue Cross said some good things about, you know, trying to help these startups understand what the so-called payers, you know, what they have to contend with all this new technology coming on, and how do new startups, you know, work with the payers and the providers in the case of HCMC. Mm-hmm. So it's a good thing. The John Blank and his son JD are really making some great inroads in the healthcare startup community, with 8 startups already housed there. And more are coming. So, yeah, good deal for them.
That's pretty great.
Yeah.
Pretty great indeed. Well, there are some other good stories. There were some other good stories in technology that went around this past week. And probably the biggest one was the House voting to end the NSA's bulk phone data collection. Now, whether or not the Senate will also do so and we'll end up with some decent laws out of it, or they'll just slide through the next iteration of the Patriot Act or what. That'll be interesting to see how that comes out.
We get past Mitch McConnell.
Yeah. I can't imagine that they're going to vote for it after they see that they have a program called Skynet, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw that too.
You know what I mean? It's not good.
Yeah. So Skynet is the, of course, it's the fictional system that caused the nuclear war and winter that killed most of humanity in the Terminator movies. But this is for the NSA. What is it exactly? It's
what, Oh, it's Skynet is basically a phone metadata program. So it's exactly what they're talking about here.
Yeah, to look for suspicious patterns, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Well,
they actually have another one. This Wired article says that there's another program. What is it called? Monster Mind.
Yeah.
Which is actually more similar to Skynet, where it's a system, surveillance system that can work on its own and retaliate against the cyber.
Yep.
You know, crimes here and there. So ominous as well.
Well, I'm sure you guys
kind of like Israel.
What could go wrong?
Well, I'm sure you guys have seen all the maps which show incoming attacks, cyber attacks, and so forth. I use a plugin for WordPress called WordFence that lets you also block countries and do all sorts of things. And they show a real-time map of things blocked by WordFence. And it's just attacks coming in from all over the place. I mean, I look at the logs sometimes in my own blog.
It's scary, isn't it?
Well, it's scary because, I mean, I've got this bad boy locked down like you wouldn't believe. And I've also got a distributed denial of service defense that the guys at Media Temple helped me set up. But it is, I got on the shit list for the guy that runs OVH in France. And so I got a script kiddie attack, and they turned a bunch of bots on me, and I had several DDoS on my blog, which of course affected everything else on my server. And so I had to pay Media Temple to get involved, and we got that nailed down. But so I spend way too much time, because I'm interested in it anyway, watching these attacks come in real time. I've renamed the WP login and done all sorts of things to fool them. And at one point, I had it redirect. If you tried to log in to WP login, it would redirect you to Interpol. So I thought that was kind of funny. But anyway, I'll put a link to WordFence because it's kind of fun to look at the map and watch these WordPress attacks in real time. But this is no fooling around. I mean,
sounds like you're all in on Monster Mind then. Let them do it.
No. Oh, no. Okay. No, because here's the kicker. Almost 100% of these WordPress bots that are attacking different sites, if there was a defense setup where it would go back and attack them in reverse, most of these are, you know, sites that somebody forgot to do an update on, and maybe it's their small business site, or maybe it's their personal blog, or maybe, you know, it's something like that. And if there's a reverse denial of service attack, automatic, then their site's hosed. The attacker site's hosed, and so is the attackee. So I don't want to see stuff like this, you know, happen. I'm sure that there are, you know, if it's government facilities or something, that's one thing to do it, but we'll see.
All right. This Wired security site has some great stories on it. I love the security news this week. Be careful with your Apple Watch and Starbucks app. Uh-oh, glad I go to Caribou, I guess. I don't know what that means, but there's another story here that they recommend. Your dick pics are about to be all over the internet.
That's a good one.
What is this site? I don't often visit this. This is Wired, but this must be their security section, I guess.
Yeah.
Lots of stuff on here that Uncle Stevie will be really interested in.
Can anyone explain why Verizon would buy AOL?
For their ad network? Tech. Yep.
Yep.
And for their what? Their
ad tech. Yeah, they don't give a
really?
Rip. That's the reason they bought them. They don't give a rip about all their publishing holdings. Look for those to be going on the block.
I agree.
You know, HuffPost, TechCrunch, and all the rest. That isn't why they bought them. And they didn't buy them for the dial-up, even though Phil is still on that program. According to Steve.
I do.
If we're to believe Steve.
I love listening to the handshake. It's just, it's great.
Yeah, yeah. AOL is 2.3
noise.
Yeah. AOL is like 2.3 billion right now. And I'm trying to find the percentage. I had read it. It was well over 70% of their revenues came in from ads, from ad, their ad mechanisms, to deliver, that's primarily mobile.
That's what Tim Armstrong. Yeah. He built that coming out of Google. You know, he was in charge of advertising at Google, and that's what he's been working on all these years, however many it's been. And now they're finally getting a payout.
Well, did you see that
for their stockholders?
Did you see he's going to probably walk away with $213 million?
Oh my gosh! Is that how much? Wow!
Yeah, isn't that something? Oh my God! Unbelievable! Well, you brought up the Apple Watch.
He did better than if he just. Yeah, mine just went off. I don't know if you heard it. I just got a breaking news. Breaking news item.
Well, I liked Walt Mossberg's article because. He wore it for a month before he said anything.
That's right.
You know, and a lot of these writers are like, "Yeah, I've been there for 3 days and I'm returning it." Well, okay. Well, you can't shift anything. It takes human beings 2 weeks to live with something before you can make a decision on whether or not you want it. I mean, that's how long it took me to when I, you know, first started dating my wife. And no, I'm kidding.
Well, the reason they're returning it is it's just a review unit. They don't own it.
Yeah, right.
You know, let's get that clear.
Yeah.
You know, they're too cheap to buy one. You know, yeah, I'm going to return it. Well, it wasn't yours to begin with. Apple comes and collects those back, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think
Walt's.
Yeah, I think his primary takeaway from this article is embodied in one paragraph where he says, "But it's a fledgling product whose optimal utility lies mostly ahead of it as new watch software is developed." I think that is the operative sentence because that's how I feel about it. Although I will say that the one thing that I absolutely adore about this is text messages.
Yep.
That to me right now is the only killer app because it has made text messaging so much easier because I was using voice dictation anyway. You know, where you say a phrase and then period or question mark or, you know, whatever. And you can do that now on the watch. You can dictate it. And then you can either send the audio stream, which my wife hates when I do that, or you can send it as text if it came across and it usually comes across pretty well. And you send that. To me, that's the killer app right now. But, boy, I sure hope there are others.
Well, so. You know, it seems to me like a lot of people have said that they want the watch to be more autonomous so they don't have to have their phone with them all the time for it to work. So even if they had a subset of the features, so let's say that they stuck a cellular radio in it, they put GPS in it, so you could do calls and SMS and maybe run limited native apps so you could do things like listen to podcasts or music or whatever without having your phone around. I think if that were the case, then there would be a lot more utility to this thing.
Be patient.
I agree. It'll come. I agree. Yeah. And not only that, not only be patient, but also the I've now read three different articles on the skin sensors. I forget what they're called. The haptic, not haptic, but the doggone it. Anyway, the sensors that are in the
sensors
that are in the base of the phone that Apple specifically did not deliver some apps because they didn't feel it was ready. And that they would just get slammed for it. So they didn't release it. And that they will, and that we'll see at WWDC, there'll be a lot about developer kits and so forth that are available for it and the things you'll be able to do with it. Because really what I want, do you guys know what a Holter monitor is? Or some guy named Dr. Holter?
Oh, yeah.
And you put it on if you want to measure your heart for 24 hours or whatever. Well, there's a
blood pressure and
Well, that doesn't do blood pressure. It just does your heart stuff. It just follows your heart stuff.
Oh, it's more like EKG, right?
Yeah. Well, I saw an analysis of the Apple Watch compared to this $250 dongle based iPhone device and software, and the accuracy. And there's also a dedicated version. And the accuracy of it compared to a Holter monitor, you looked at the graph and it was almost identical. And I looked at that and I went, son of a bitch, they're going to be able to have an app that for example, will track your oxygen levels in your blood, because that's in the sensor. It'll be able to track your heart rate, and maybe it'll ping you to say, like the Holter monitor, you know, if you feel an aberration, you're supposed to write something down in a diary so you could maybe dictate that into the watch. You know, things like that we haven't even seen yet, but it'll be here. And you can answer your phone on your watch. Who was that?
Yeah.
There you go.
That was me. Sorry.
Is your watch ringing now, too? Did your watch ring, though, for a sec? I bet you it did. I bet your watch rang, too.
He's got to take the call now, so he's
off. Yeah, I did. I had to mute because, yes, my watch went off, too. Sorry about that.
No worries.
Yeah, but you're right. The health applications are amazing. And a Holter monitor is a bulky thing, as is a 24-hour blood pressure monitor, which is a different thing. And to be able to do these kinds of things on a wrist wearable is amazing. And the health community is really excited about the research, the clinical study kinds of things. I mean, it's like a huge breakthrough for them.
And people are signing up in droves. There's another new one that just came out that people have signed up for. I'm sure we'll hear about it at the developers conference, but you're right. The research kit thing is doing really well. And plus, you know, there's a medications app that I downloaded, cause I wanted to see it. Cause this is one of the things that I really, really wanted from when my dad was alive. I wanted there to be some device that would prompt him when he had to take his medications. And so we got to the point where my sisters and I would split up the week and we'd each take a day to call dad at certain times to make sure he was taking his meds. And even though we had it all broken out, right? And I wanted something that would prompt him. And also that we could maybe set from afar to do it. So I was looking at this medications app, which was kind of cool. And I realized, oh my God, this could prompt Phil to take his Viagra on time.
That's true.
Or is it Cialis? Which is it?
Well, I go towards the Cialis because it's supposedly ready for you at any time. So
there you go.
Haven't tested it yet, but we'll see.
Okay.
Too much information.
Yeah, too much information. AM. All right, let's segue to a Microsoft story about Windows 10 editions. I don't know about you guys. I've been running Windows 10, the preview in Parallels.
And really?
I really like it.
Really?
I really am. I'm amazed that I'm saying this, but I am deeply impressed with Windows 10 and what they've done.
It's good, but I want mobile. I want pro enterprise mobile. That's what I want. They only have mobile enterprise. So I want the pro part of that too.
And what would that do for you?
I'm just kidding.
Oh, okay. Right.
This is just ridiculous. They have all these different versions of Windows.
Oh yeah.
Well, that's okay. What I was going to say. You know? Why does there have to be so many?
It's all licensing. That's what it is.
Sure, it is. So yeah.
Stupid. You know what I mean?
Well, then they have
different prices for all these different versions. So most people will use Home, and then they've got the mobile for your phones, and then they have Pro for people like us that want all the features, right? So that's the premium desktop.
Yeah.
And they have enterprise for people in big companies. And then they have education, which is probably a cheap version. And mobile enterprise. I guess that's for Surface tablet thing? Maybe?
Well, and then they have Windows 10 IoT Core for the Internet of Things, isn't it a rebranding of Windows Embedded?
I think it is.
Okay.
Why do they have just one? I don't understand that, but it's just...
Well, they charge different prices for all of
it. It's crazy.
Well, like, and they also... But they also want to have different versions available for different footprints. So, like, for example, Costco has a netbook available from Acer, and it's... I forget the model number. It's a really, really nice little netbook. And this thing is, I think, $249. And, you know, you couldn't put a Windows 10 Enterprise on there. I mean, it would just be, it'd be like putting the proverbial bloatware on a device. So, but yeah, there are too many, and there are too many licensing schemes. Actually, what I'm having a problem with right now is I bought the five pack or the Windows Home version, where you can have up to five different users who can each have it on two different devices. And it turns out I had to switch accounts because my son had been using his Xbox on my account and wanted to keep his username and all this kind of stuff. So we went through this whole thing. So I have now been working with Microsoft billing for 2 weeks,
wow,
trying to get them to switch over to a different email address because I opened up a new account. Now, you would think that would be a two-second thing. I've been on the phone with them for 2 hours. I've gone back and forth in email. And I just think, can't you people find your ass with both hands? I mean, come on. No, really.
All you want is to move your gamer tag Big Stevo to another account.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, actually, his tag is Undead Destroyer.
Oh, brother.
Is his tag. Well, he started it when he was 10 years old, so you gotta cut him some slack.
Reading zombie
books, yeah,
exactly. Comic books, I guess.
Exactly.
All right.
Yeah.
So what's this Venom deal? Have you seen this, Steve?
Yeah, you know, I haven't paid a lot of attention to it because it's not something that would affect me specifically at the server level.
Really all about
it's all about you.
It's all about
you. It is.
The hell with you people and your security.
If you're in the data center, you're on your own.
Well, so I run my server is a dedicated virtual VPS, a virtual server. And so Media Temple is the company where it's at. So it's, you know, it's all solid state drive based VPS. And they've already handled it. And they told me how in a support tag. Because as soon as I became aware of this, I sent a note to them in support. Said, explain to me exactly how you're handling this, or do I have to take measures myself? And there was a couple of tweaks they suggested in my VPS, and then they told me all the things they were doing at the external level, so I'm good to go. And apparently all the major web hosts are doing exactly the same thing. Anybody running anything virtual?
Nope.
You're saying nope?
Nope.
No, sorry.
Who? Who's not?
I'm just kidding.
Oh. You're so mean to me. I'm gonna have
just
to
try to throw
life.
You off every once in a while. That's all. Come on, Steve, work through it.
Yeah, but the data centers are freaked out about this, so I'm feeling good that they're really nailing it. Good. I think so.
So not to be alarmed is what you're saying.
Yeah, unless you're with, you know, unless you have a site, for example, that's built on, you know, Schmedlap's web hosting. And because your buddy Joe Schmedlap has a server, you know, then you should probably be concerned. But if you're at any brand name hosting company, you know, Bluehost, DreamHost, HostGator, GoDaddy, any of those.
All the same company, strangely enough, but yeah.
Well, GoDaddy's not. Or did they get acquired by?
I have no idea.
No, but you're right. Yeah, there's basically one company that has done all the roll-ups. But so... Weird.
So, you know, we've been doing this podcasting thing for, sorry, let me scroll up to the top, 313 episodes.
Yes.
And public radio is now finally hitting on the fact that, hey, we could actually sell advertising on our podcast. Hey. It's not on the air.
And Jeez, not violate our mission.
This forever.
Yeah.
Yep. But there was an article about podcasting and the selling of public radio that Steve sent around our way. But, you know, I got to tell you, this is one of the barriers to this, because I, you know, I've been talking about this for a long time, and I've always thought it was a great revenue stream for, and I'm a big fan of anything you can do to cut down on pledge week. I'm all about
yes,
that.
Yes, absolutely.
But, you know, you can sell advertising, even though you're a public radio station, as long as you're not selling advertising on the air, you can sell it on your podcast because that is not regulated by the FCC.
Right.
Well,
right.
At least, yet. Yes. So
I love the Ira Glass quote. Yeah, my hope is we can move away from a model of asking listeners for money and join the free market. Yeah. Public radio is ready for capitalism.
Sure. I think, but you know what has always kind of kept it away, I think I had this discussion, I don't remember if I had this discussion with one of the guys at Minnesota Public Radio, but it was one of these concepts of, well, we don't want to necessarily counter our brand that's on air online, meaning we don't want to ask for, you know, we don't want to advertise online because that it would sort of give us that same sort of we sold out sort of concept, which I think is bullshit. But you know, if you're looking for ways to generate revenue, and believe me, Minnesota Public Radio does not need to find ways to generate revenue. But if there's a way for a struggling station to generate revenue through their podcast, I think it's something that they sure have to do.
Well, and
I think it's their responsibility to do myself.
One of the things that they had in this article was on Car Talk. Ray Magliozzi makes first-person approvals of product punctuated with his signature laugh. In a recent episode of Fresh Air with guest Louis C.K., an ad for Stamps.com came on, though not voiced by Terry Gross, and was scored with music from the soundtrack to Louis. And so, you know, essentially what they're doing is, and this was started by Arthur Godfrey back in the 50s when TV first came out, about how he would, just during the course of the show, all of a sudden he'd pick up a sample of Lipton soup. I'm sure you've maybe seen these commercials or heard about this as an advertising model. But he was the very first radio or television major broadcaster that incorporated ads directly in his show as though it was just totally natural.
Native advertising.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And one of the ones that does this, I think, better than most is Leo Laporte on the Twit Network, because that's exactly what they do. They claim that they only advertise products that they actually use and believe in, which I think is crap. But be that as it may, they do, in fact, interject and on a recent... they brought back the Screensavers, the show that used to be on cable TV. They're calling it the new Screensavers. They're in their second episode, and the second one had Kevin Rose on. And so Leo starts to do this thing about Audible.com. And Kevin starts to go off on this riff about Audible and the books he loves and the things he's doing. And Leo's telling about using Audible in the early days. And you know, it was just this totally and completely natural sounding advertisement. So,
did you just say advertisement?
I did.
Where the hell are you from?
Jolly good.
Yeah.
Advert. An advert.
An advert. I saw it on my mobile.
Which was made out of aluminium.
Aluminium.
All right. Hey, let's
get back on schedule.
Yes, let's get into the cool thing of the week, what's turning out to be my favorite segment.
Yes, exactly.
And let's start with, let's see, how about Graham?
Okay, well, I'm liking this NexPack, the first truly modular smartphone case on Kickstarter. I hesitate to, they've already blown past their goal. Of course, everybody does. They set a low goal. They're up to 185K, 13 days to go. This thing is wild. Who knows if it's going to work reliably, but it's a case that actually lets you add memory, battery capacity, an amplified speaker, and more in modules on the back of your case. And oh my gosh, it's a cool idea. I'm thinking these guys might be in the UK, but I'm not sure. But unfortunately, they don't have it for the 6 Plus yet. But they're offering it for the 6 and for the Galaxy 5 and 6, I think. And take a look at it. It's got a flashlight module, an SD card reader module, and this is one that I think is cool: temperature and humidity module. USB flash. I mean, it sounds almost too good to be true. And you know, we've all been sucked into these Kickstarter projects that don't deliver on time. It's going to be a long wait, I think. I already have a case for my 6 Plus that I got on Kickstarter that's starting to fall apart on me.
Well, I like so this one. I like this module, Laser.
Laser.
This is great for meetings and presentations, or for shining into cockpits to blind pilots from the ground. No, don't do that at home, kids.
You kids. Well, this is kind of a riff on the whole Google is working on their modular phone, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that the whole actual phone is modular?
I thought there was a Firefox OS based one.
Or is it
too.
Firefox? Yeah.
I think there was a second one. I think Google's doing it. And, yeah. All right, Mr. Tim.
All right. Remember way back, we were all talking about the HyperCard for apps.
Yes.
And I believe these guys have invented it. It's called Glide, and it's only have 2 hours to go. They're from the UK, but basically the idea is you put text, images, movies in a structured Dropbox folder, and then their system creates an app for you based on it. So anyone can create apps, and you know, they have several things like the Loop magazine. It uses Glide, which is Jim Dalrymple's blog, and a few other examples. And it looks like it's going to be great for, you know, people like museums and sports clubs and hotels and universities. People that want to do apps, but you know, maybe don't have the knowledge to do it, or don't want to spend the money to do it, and
now, are looking for really shitty performance. Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay, all right. If you're gonna be a hater, haters gonna hate.
Spoken like a true app developer.
That's right. So you better watch out for this.
Nothing beats native.
You've got to watch out for it.
Well, if next time Phil needs a sweater, he and I will go to the loom factory where they'll make him one by hand. And it's, I think they go for about $1,100 now. Yeah.
Farabone.
Whatever. I thought it was a cool idea though. So
yeah.
And in their video, they describe it as a HyperCard for apps.
Nice. I'm going to study this one. Phil.
Yeah.
Go.
We didn't have, you know, we didn't have the horses today because we didn't do the security tip of the week because we got to talk about
that. There's no tip of the week.
There is no tip of the week. So to kind of go with that and then replace that, I'm pretty high on this new Trotify, which makes your bicycle sound like a horse. It's quite nice. If you take a look at it at Trotify.com.
I mean, really?
Jeez!
All this is it's an automated version of the
Monty Python
coconuts from coconuts Monty Python.
Clack it together.
Bring out your dead. Yep.
Oh my God! Okay,
it clacks coconuts together. It's
great for gifts.
How funny!
You have to assemble this darn thing yourself. Look, it looks like Rube Goldberg invented it.
I know. Is this what a great idea though? So,
oh my God!
Oh, brother.
All right. Well, I'll get to mine then. Mine is a $9 computer on a chip. And these guys wanted to raise 50 grand. They've raised 1.3 million as of today, and they got 21 days to go. And you might look at this and go, yeah, whatever. Well, watch the video. Just watch the video. Not right now, of course. Listen to the end of the podcast. But it's basically a computer on a chip, and you can do all kinds of wonderful stuff with it. And I won't go through the whole thing, but, you know, it's got a nice processor and memory and 4 gigs of storage, Wi-Fi it can connect to, and Bluetooth. And it works with any screen, so you can get different modules. So, in a lot of ways, it's Raspberry Pi and Arduino and all of that. But I'm looking at this more for the less geeky hobbyist. You know, somebody that isn't quite as adept and won't really get into the nitty gritty and the guts of a Raspberry Pi or an Arduino. And so anyway, I thought that was pretty cool.
It is.
Yep.
I had it in the rundown, but I saw it in your cool thing of the week. But Well, I think what's significant about this is that it has memory and it has Wi-Fi and Bluetooth built in, mm-hmm. which the Raspberry Pi doesn't have. You have to supply your own SD card. You have to get modules for both Bluetooth and Wi-Fi, which takes up space on your USB connections.
Yes.
And the Raspberry Pi 2 has 4 USBs, but still takes up half of them to get the same functionality. Plus, this thing is really, really small.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, it's smaller than a business card. And the Raspberry Pi is about 2 to 3 times bigger than that. So,
and they're really undercutting the price by quite a bit, aren't they?
They are.
Yeah.
This is basically a entry level smartphone on a chip. That's what this is.
Interesting.
Yeah,
it'd be pretty cool.
Yep.
Interesting.
All right. Yep. Well, Hack the Gap is going on, and let's talk about events real quick because we're running a little over. Arthur Ventures on the 20th, and who's going to that?
I'm planning on going up for that and the Midwest Mobile Summit later that same day.
Okay.
Starting on the 20th. Yep.
Got it. And then week from today on the Saturday, the 23rd, is the Hack Factory.
Right.
And then Cool Doesn't Count. Oh,
yeah. You want to say something about Cool that? Doesn't Count in Healthcare is about marketing and positioning for healthcare products at Treehouse Health. That should be interesting. There's a medical technology agency called Stone Arch Creative, I think, which is presenting at that one.
Excellent. And then there's another maker event, the 30th at the State Fairgrounds, which would be the big mini maker fair.
That'll be a great venue because being the big education building, right?
Yep. And that's, let's see, then we talked about FemTech, and then the Drupal Camp comes up in June, at the end of June. So perhaps they'll teach you the Drupal handshake.
Maybe. You know, there's also
very complicated.
There's also a Joomla event going on here.
Really?
And it was interesting because I was going back and forth with a guy I know in the Ukraine because I hadn't emailed him or Skyped him for a while and just sent him a note and, hey, Emil, how's it going over there? You guys keeping the Russians out, you know, and so on. So we were going back and forth and we were talking about stuff and he talked about how he had just hired 3 Joomla developers. And it was so funny because I just said to him, I go, you know, no one I know uses Joomla.
Yeah.
And he said, Steve, literally every one of the former Soviet states, Joomla is completely dominant as it is throughout most of Europe and Asia. And I thought that was really interesting.
There you
go.
So
who knows? So I don't really keep track.
So it may be better to just go to a Joomla camp in Europe or Asia somewhere.
Might be.
Yeah. Well, there's one coming in the Twin Cities. If you want to check it out, I'll put the link in the show notes. Okay.
Well, we'll catch up. We'll probably talk a little bit about Hack the Gap and all sorts of things next week on
the Minovate Gang podcast. Thanks, guys.
Have
Thanks,
a good
everybody,
week.
For listening. See ya.
Play your BBQ records.